Welcome back to Head Games on Sirius Satellite and Sports Byline with Jarrett Bell. It's about time we had you on the show. How are you?
Pretty good, Nick. What's going on?
What are you working on these days, Jarrett? Do you guys divide responsibilities or themes or focuses or teams, or do you get a chance to basically go wherever you want to go, where no man has gone before, if you will?
Yeah, we divide up a lot of stuff, but, you know, we used to divide it by conference, and I was the AFC beat reporter for a number of years, and over the past couple of years, we just kind of dropped those designations. I think during the playoffs, I might just concentrate on one conference or another, but you know, it allows you to get out. I mean, it's a big league, a lot of crossover and that sort of thing in terms of the conferences. And, yeah, so from week to week, you never really know with this league. You never know what's hot, what's a good story, what's not a good story. But I'll tell you what, coming in tomorrow's paper, I did a piece about the roughing the passer penalties that have the rule, actually, that has fueled a lot of debate because defensive players have been pretty hesitant. I don't know, Nick, if I've ever seen as many cases where defensive players have let quarterbacks go because they were afraid to get penalized, and then the quarterback, you know, goes on to make a play, and then I've seen a lot of ticky-tacky roughing the passer penalty. So that's just one of the things that I've been working on this week.
That's good stuff. In fact, you look at sort of the way defensive linemen go from being the vicious hitters to sort of ballet dancers when they get a little bit too close. You saw that at the end of the game with Tennessee and the Giants when Vince Young's in the grasp, and then suddenly it's as if, you know, the defensive lineman's just afraid to incur, especially at the end of the game, that penalty. Here's Merrill Hodge, by the way, from yesterday's show about the very same thing.
Mm-hmm. So that they had a full, complete book on that kid, and, you know, you got to give him a lot of credit. This is where I think a quarterback always has the advantage. When they go to the sideline, I think a lot of defenders tend to think, you know what, they're going to go out of bounds. You know, not, you know, they start to ease up because of all the penalties that are occurred. You know, the confusion
and
that penalty. And you know, like, you know, he was like, I don't care what's going on, I'm not going to stop. You know, and I feel far sorry for defenders right now, and the quarterback, how to, you know, tackle him, how to move, do anything to him, because, you know, it's so ambiguous as to what's going to be called. You know, I hope at the end of the year they address that, and they, you know, they make it a 5-yard penalty or a 15-yard penalty, and the 5-yard penalty is not a first down. They've got to do something.
I agree.
They surely are not even based on some of the things that we have seen, and I think that the officials need to clearly be taught, you know, what is roughing the passer. I don't think they know, you know.
I don't think they know either. What do you think?
Well, you know, I was talking to Mike Pereira yesterday. He's the director of officiating for the NFL.
The worst job in the NFL, by the way.
Yeah, it's a pretty tough one.
That's the one where he says, by the way, he sends the note to the head coach, we blew it, sorry, but, you know, we see those every week.
Yeah, you see that. But the thing with roughing the passer, it is a judgment call. You know, some of these penalties have been cases where, you know, the quarterback got drove into the ground a little bit too hard. And how can you call that? I think I saw that situation at Seattle on a Monday night game a couple weeks ago where Cullen Jenkins, the D-tackle for the Packers, hit Matt Hasselbeck, and it didn't seem like it was flagging or anything, and Hasselbeck had thrown the ball, but the guy was in the middle of his rush and just kind of followed through. They called a flag. It was an incomplete pass. That extended the drive. The Seahawks scored, and then they took control of the games. Justin Smith had a similar situation, the Cincinnati Bengals defensive end, back in October. He hits Bruce Gradkowski towards the end of the game, third down, incomplete, and it extends the drive. And then guess what? Tampa Bay kicks like a 60-yard field goal to win the game.
62.
Yeah, 62. So you've seen these types of situations, and you wonder if they've gone a little bit too far. But the thing Pereira told me yesterday, Nick, that's worth mentioning, he said that, he tells his officials, when you're in doubt, call it. Okay? You know, a lot of times they say, if you're in doubt, don't do it. No. When you're in doubt, when you're making this judgment, go ahead and throw the flag. So that's a disadvantage for the defensive guys.
Well, there are two things that make it very difficult. The first thing is, in college, you see it still. Guys that are hitting right with a combination of their helmet and their shoulder pads, not directly on the quarterback's helmet, but right brushing against it as they make the initial hit. They may turn away, but by then it's too late. That would be called in the NFL. The second thing is, by the sidelines, the guy's coming in, he's run 35, 40 yards on the play, He's accelerating to the ball because his closing speed is the key thing as the defensive back. Now the quarterback's right there. He doesn't know if he's going to run down the sidelines. And this is what Merrill Hodge was talking about with Anderson, who's 6'4", 230-something pounds. He's a big boy.
Right.
And they don't have a book on him either. And this guy, you know, continues running up the sidelines. Now, the player wants to do the honorable thing and not kill him, especially because in a heartbeat, in literally half a tenth of a second, he can go from being a foot inbounds to a yard out of bounds.
Yeah.
So what do you do in that situation?
Yeah, exactly. You pray that you don't get the flag. I think you got – because once you ease up, then you give – the opportunity for the quarterback to make a cutback. I mean, imagine, like, if it's Michael Vick, I mean, think about that. If it's Michael Vick in the scenario you just described, he could
take that
and zip-zap and gone. And that's the thing that has really got a lot of defensive players feeling like their hands are tied a bit.
You know, and you look at a Michael Vick, and you look at a Vince Young, and even a Garcia for Philadelphia, there is a wheel movement, and of course Tony Romo, towards mobile quarterbacks that extend the play. So this issue is not going away.
No, I don't think so.
There is too much pressure on quarterbacks. There are too many athletic defensive ends like Baltimore's, you know, where they can run like a 4.640. You know, these guys weigh 300 pounds. So what do offensive schemes do if they don't create more flexibility by having a quarterback like Tony Romo who injects flexibility, the ability to adapt when a play is broken?
Yeah. I mean, I think that's, you know, you make sure that your quarterbacks are good actors as well. so if they get brushed just a little bit, they can go down and maybe draw a flag. And, you know, that's the thing about football that just gets me, Nick, is when you see people playing hoping to draw a flag. I saw that a couple of weeks ago when I was in New England, and I swear the Bears put up four or five deep passes that game that were really low percentage passes, and I think they threw them up thinking, well, if we don't catch the ball, we'll get a flag, and hey, a couple of those cases they did.
Yeah, and there is a tendency, and Peyton Manning is one of the best for a quarterback, especially in the late part of the season, to underthrow the ball because the defensive back is taught to keep his eye on the receiver, and he tends to overplay the ball. And at the last second, the receiver, especially if he's a large physical one, can easily step back at that last second and catch the ball.
Yeah, and that's what Jake DeLome should have done the other night in Philadelphia.
What was that?
Oh,
seriously,
man.
What was what happened to that? Was that a broken pattern?
Yeah, I don't think so. Remember, they scored a touchdown on a similar fade to the corner with Keyshawn. And, you know, I was talking to one of my buddies here in the office today, and he said he thought Keyshawn jumped too early. And that's why, you know, he was out of position, and the ball was way over, and Keyshawn jumped, and the ball goes over his head. So maybe there was something to that. But, you know, my problem with the play as it was, it's a three-point game. You don't want to risk a turnover. Remember Carolina lost that game at Cincinnati a few weeks ago where they're in position to tie the game with a field goal and they throw an interception. Well, they do it again. So maybe you call a different pattern, something low, tight, that nobody can get to except for your guy, or, hey, run the ball in.
So I have this ritual where Monday night I'm riding next to Charles Barkley here in Scottsdale at the Athletic Club, and he's got his $10,000 on whoever is, you know, the Monday night game. That he was doing the over and under. I'm learning from Charles, and he's got a problem, but at least he's honest enough to admit it. And I love the guy, but you know, it was interesting to hear him say when we're talking about great quarterbacks, and I think DeLome is so close because for 58 minutes he is a good quarterback, but the difference between the great and the average players is the great ones don't make the horrible mistakes.
Yeah, because if you don't make the horrible mistake, at least you can play to the next play. That kind of crosses all, that kind of transcends a lot of situations in a lot of sports, no question.
Well, when we come back, Jared Bell from USA Today, we're going to be joined by Chris Mortensen, and we're going to talk about tackling fundamentals, how many drop passes in the NFL, the horrible tackling around, the AFC versus the NFC, and why the AFC has the advantage. And finally, we're going to talk about Larry Johnson's comments with Chris Carter about whether he was more responsive to a black coach, and maybe we do need to have more black coaches because they sure seem to be doing a great job. We'll be right back on Head Games on Sports Byline and Sirius Satellite.